managed from the same gearbox. And the driver, consciousness, selects which state he wants to be in. Reality consists of shifting, interchangeable states that emanate from one source, consciousness. Giving the universe its eviction notice. It is alluring to think that we exist in a living universe. By definition, if the cosmos has a mind, it must also be alive. But whether you call it a conscious universe, a living universe, or, as we have done, a human universe, problems creep in. One problem is practical. How do you live in a conscious universe? Would you shop for groceries, go to birthday parties, and gossip around the water cooler any differently? The answer is yes. A conscious universe is totally transformed from the uncertain universe we now occupy. And the transformation runs so deep that it calls all behavior into question. As Peter Wilberg, one of the most astute and gifted qualia theorists, has explained, we don't see because we have eyes. Eyes are physical organs that evolved to serve the mind's desire to see. Mind comes first. It reaches out to experience reality through qualia, which embrace the five senses, along with sensations, images, feelings, and thoughts in the mind. The spiritual rebirth that every saint, sage, and mystic has promised depends on a new reality, which means a new universe, or rather, a new way to look at the universe already there. There's a huge roadblock to such dreams of renewal, and it's the second problem we face when approaching reality as a whole. The limited mind can't do it. It cannot think its way to renewal, imagine its way, feel, see, or touch what transformation would be like. The linkage between the uncertain universe and the mind that created it is as strong as iron. In other words, if the mind is trapped in its own perceptions, how can the same mind free itself? We seem to face another snake biting its tail predicament. Here, a new term will be useful. Monism, derived from the Greek monos, which means one, alone, or unique, monism is the alternative to dualism. Oneness is the basic trait of reality, not separation. In some forms of monism, everything in existence is part of the body of God. Other forms of monism view the universe as made of only one substance. Physicalists, who believe that everything can be traced to a material source, stand for one school of monism. Einstein's search for the unified field, the holy grail of science, is monism. The rival school, which believes that everything is made of mind, used to be called idealism. But this term became so discredited that we'll use the term consciousness instead. Imagine that you aren't allowed to cast a ballot in the next presidential election until you declare which monism you belong to, physicalist or consciousness, which we've also tagged matter first versus mind first. How would you choose? Everyone's mind is hopelessly conditioned, burdened by all the old choices it has made, and these old choices, going back to the first hours of infancy, turn out to be self-centered. There's an urge in the development of children that says, I have to be me. In other words, a freestanding individual. But projecting this urge onto the cosmos causes dualism to run amok. It turns the usefulness of a separate self into a law of nature, which isn't so. In everyday life, dualism falls into categories everyone is familiar with. What you like versus what you dislike. What causes pleasure versus what causes pain. What you want to do versus what you don't want to do. People you like versus people you dislike. In short, it's an either-or world built of opposites. The opposite of before is after. The opposite of near is far. The opposite of here is there. But these paired opposites are not actually real. They are mind-made. So if you want to get real, all the mind-made stuff must be discarded. At the most mundane level, if you judge people by the color of their skin, you cannot know who they really are until the concept of skin color no longer has any bearing on the case. It can take many decades to heal this one symptom of dualism. One can only imagine how hard it is to throw dualism out completely. The process goes far beyond personal values. In essence, it means giving the universe an eviction notice. Because the subatomic particle has no fixed properties, neither do the things made of particles. If you take this seriously, all physical objects have to be evicted, from quarks to galaxies. Objects cannot exist without space. So when objects are sent packing, space has to hit the road. And since space is in a relativistic relationship with time, according to Einstein, time doesn't get to hang around either. The present state of physics, in some quarters at least, has gotten this far. The perspective in which matter, energy, other physical quantities, time, and space are deprived of absolute fixed reality can be called weak dualism. Because, as heroic as it is to depose the material universe, we haven't arrived at wholeness yet. Once it occurs to the mind that the material universe was mind-made all along, there's not much reason for the mind to trust itself. Some scientists contemplate the mind's ability to create qualia and conclude, wrongly, that there is no meaning to anything, that the whole cosmos is pointless. This loss of confidence can be productive, however, if it motivates the next stage of the journey to wholeness. In order to stop believing in self-created illusions, the conditioned mind is also served an eviction notice, this time by itself. Only then can cosmic mind enter as a replacement. It's rather like a cardiologist performing a heart transplant on himself, only trickier. Rupert Spira, a brilliant spiritual teacher, calls this the acceptance that some things are not mental events. Death is one example. The mind would like to survive death, Spira jokes, so that it can come back and say what the experience was like. In its nature, the mind isn't an activity at all, but something else. Just as a lake isn't essentially the waves that ripple across its surface, the mind isn't the activity of thinking, feeling, sensing, or imagining. A lake is a still body of water. The mind is awareness without waves. This is the unchanging backdrop of everything that comes and goes. There are no longer any mental events to cling to. And steadily, over time, silent mind becomes like home, like a resting place where you truly belong. The good news is that lacking mental events, the mind doesn't die. Instead, it does exactly what was required all along. It changes state. In this case, the change is from constant thinking, wishing, fearing, desiring, and remembering, that is, the experience of separation, to a state in which one is simply conscious, aware, and awake, that is, the experience of wholeness. The choice to make this shift is ours. Being infinitely flexible, reality permits the experience of separation to be totally convincing, and the experience of wholeness to be totally convincing. But the two states certainly feel different. Here are some examples of how separation is experienced. What separation feels like. You see yourself as an isolated individual. You listen to the demands of your ego and place I, me and mine, ahead of other people's. You are powerless in the face of mighty natural forces. The basics of survival require work, struggle, and worry. You long to join with another person in order to solve the problem of loneliness. The constant cycle of pleasure and pain is inescapable. You may find yourself prey to mental states beyond your control, such as depression, anxiety, hostility, and envy. The external world dominates over the inner world. Hard reality is inescapable. When you ask other people if they are in the same state of separation as yourself, it turns out that they are. Since everyone is in the same soup, it becomes accepted as reality. What's fascinating about this list isn't how much misery it outlines, although there is more than enough of that. The fascination lies in the linkage between everything on the list and the behavior of the universe. As several quantum pioneers pointed out, the universe displays whatever the experimenter is looking for. By contrast, here is what it feels like after the illusion of separation has fallen away. What being real feels like. You are not in the universe. The universe is in you. In here and out there are mirror reflections of each other. Consciousness is continuous and present in everything. It is the one reality. All the separate activities in the universe are actually one activity. Reality isn't just fine-tuned. It is perfectly tuned. Your purpose is to align yourself with the creativity of the cosmos. The next thing you feel like doing is the best thing you can do. Existence feels free, open, and without obstacles. Mind and ego still exist, but they get a lot more time off. Knowing who you really are, you set off to explore unknown possibilities. Probably the first point, the universe is in you, seems the most baffling. As a declarative statement of physical fact, it borders on the absurd. Since billions of galaxies obviously cannot be confined inside a human being, where would they be? Inside the skull? Clearly not. But the universe is in you comes at the end of a journey. It's not an isolated idea. Along the journey, we saw that every experience occurs as qualia. In other words, qualities like color, taste, and sound. Since qualia occur in consciousness, they aren't limited by physical dimensions. No one can boast, blue is a much bigger color for me than it is for you. Or, I keep my vocabulary in a locker in Los Angeles because I go there so often. Because qualia have no dimension, they aren't short or tall, fast or slow, and so forth. It is entirely possible for a cold virus to occupy the same space as a billion galaxies when we are speaking of mental space. Blue has no specific home except in consciousness. You can either call it to mind or leave it be. The same is true of your vocabulary. You can call upon the word giraffe while letting the rest of your vocabulary exist in mental space, which is everywhere and nowhere. The brain is made of qualia. It has the texture of stiff oatmeal, contains miniature watery lakes, and exudes various secretions. All of these qualia also occupy the same space as a cold virus and a billion galaxies. They are all in consciousness. What we commonly refer to as outer space is just another qualia. You might protest, "Look here, my brain is inside my skull, and there's no getting around this fact." But imagine the face of someone you love. The brain produces the image in such a way that it isn't inside its tissues. No matter how hard you search, you won't find any images in the brain. So it must be true that the brain serves one function. It gives access to the mental space where all concepts, experiences, memories, images, all qualia reside. A radio gives access to a 100-piece symphony orchestra without anybody tearing it apart to see the 100 musicians hiding inside. Yet neuroscientists find it hard to stop doing the same thing. They want the brain to be the place where consciousness lives, when in reality, the brain is only the doorway to where consciousness lives. Why did consciousness need such a doorway? For the same reason that getting hit by a bus hurts or even kills you. Consciousness has the innate habit of creating things, events, experiences. This is its natural behavior. Max Planck had this in mind when he said, as we've quoted several times, "I regard consciousness as fundamental. We cannot get behind consciousness." Reality doesn't have to give an explanation for how it behaves, because it has nothing to answer to but itself. The mind as creator. This leads to a new stage of the journey in which your mind sees quite clearly that it is the maker of your personal reality and has functioned as the maker all along. In itself, this isn't a profound insight. Anyone who has fallen in love only to discover, months or years later, that their beloved is an ordinary person, knows the power of mind made reality. The real insight is to see that mind making uses no bricks or mortar, not even the finest matter, energy, time, and space, but only one thing: concepts. Take the concept of I, the separate self. The instant the mind thinks I, which is the root of all separation, the entire universe falls into line as a world apart from I. The whole setup would be hollow and boring if I saw through the illusion. So it comes up with a multitude of experiences that keep separation going. For many people, science proves that the illusion works. They are as sure of the moon and the stars as of anything in existence. It took imagination, skill,